Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist for Murphy and Silvest. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Wendy. Nice to be with you after a three-day weekend.
I know. And speaking of the three-day weekend, your newsletter has kind of bummed me out because it says our next day off is Thanksgiving. What?
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't think we get Halloween or I don't know if there's anything else in there. But yeah, that's kind of the next market holiday is Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, that's depressing. But let's talk about the market for a minute. I wanted to ask you, is the money savvy trait inherited? Is that something? Because like my mom never really taught me how to save money. I took a consumer economics class in high school. And back then it told me, oh, this is how you write a personal check. But I don't have a lot of money savvy. And like I said, my mom didn't teach me. Is that something that is inherited or taught?
It is taught. I mean, you know, certainly when we were back in school, we did have the consumer ed classes, and yeah, you had to balance the checkbook, which I don't think anybody does anymore. But I think that it's true that there should be, and there was, at least for a while, learning about investing, markets, savings, not necessarily so much the markets, but certainly about savings. And I think a lot of it is passed down from the parents. So you do look at your parents and how do they handle money? Do they save first? Do they, you know, do they have good money habits that get passed down? Do you give your kids an allowance? Do you talk to them about how to save for, you know, if you're spending money on this, then maybe you won't be able to get that. So, you know, those types of things get ingrained early on, and kids do see it. And, you know, do you give your kids a credit card when they go to college? You know, do they talk about, okay, you can't go to every college because it costs money and we can only afford X. So let's take a look at some other choices. So I think a lot of it is a discussion with family members, with kids. So I do think to a certain extent that does, it's not hereditary, but it certainly does get passed down from the parents and the way they handle money.
Now, how does the market change, like, between summer and now Labor Day and we're moving into the fall? Are they different?
Just ask Steve. Yeah, the markets are down a little bit this morning, so welcome to September. September and October historically are poorer parts of the year for the market. And you can go back over a long period of time and you can see it bore out. Those are two of the worst months of the year. And I think some of it is, you know, again, people coming back from vacation, taking a look at their situation. Like the markets this year have been very good, so maybe we take a little bit of money off the table, where there's concerns about the election. So there's a lot of things to be looking at and be worried about, and that lends itself to maybe a poorer September and October. But interesting, if you take a look at the markets in election years, September and October are actually not too bad as people anticipate the election, and the markets tend to do well after the election.
And what about spending? Are people still spending their money? I know I am. I'm sorry to say. Budget? What does that mean?
You're there with everybody else. No, people are still spending money. And here's the interesting part of it. And again, as we've talked about in the past, it's not the U.S. and every consumer spending. It is very much by income strata. So the higher income, the more spending. The lower income, they're struggling. You know, so the inflation numbers, the food prices, gas prices are having an impact on the lower income, and they're not spending it like those that are in the higher brackets, which are doing a little bit more travel, a little bit more vacationing, and spending on services and hotels. So there is a difference in the spending. So when you take a look at it over a very broad swath, spending is still very good. But again, certainly there are pockets where people are not spending and not able to spend.
I am not spending on big things. You know, I still have to buy makeup because I like makeup, but I haven't bought a pair of shoes in over a year. That's huge for me. And, you know, that's the sad thing, Paul, is people have to figure out, you know, wants versus needs at this point. For instance, groceries, you used to be able to go to the grocery store to grab a couple of items and, you know, you'd add a few extras on and it would be $50. Now that same thing is like $100. When will grocery prices kind of get back in check, or will they not?
I'm not sure that they will, and it's not the grocery stores. It's the food itself. So beef cattle herds are down significantly from where they were pre-pandemic. We've had issues in the past with avian bird flu, and so that's had an impact on eggs and chicken prices. The good news is that chickens and eggs. You can get chicken from egg to plate in the form of a chicken very quickly. It takes a long time to build those cattle herds. So it, depending on the food product and depending upon the manufacturing process and all the rest of it, harvesting, we could see food prices remain relatively high. Some of it is due to trade, some of it is due to weather, some of it is due to the overall level of animals that are available for slaughter.
What's the jobs report looking like?
I can tell you Friday about 9 o'clock. That estimate is somewhere around 150,000 new jobs. That's actually not a bad number, but I think the Fed has pointed the market in the direction that they're going to cut rates by 25 basis points when they meet in a couple weeks. What I think is likely to happen if we get a jobs report that's sub 50,000 or below, I think the Fed might move 50 basis points. If the jobs report is significantly above 150,000, I think that'll call into question whether the Fed should move at all or not. But I think the Fed will still move because they've pretty much told the market this is what we're going to do. But I think that's really the focus for the Fed. It's not on inflation anymore. It's really on the jobs market.
All right. And finally, Paul, I have to ask you, what exactly is a fiduciary? Because I've been hearing that word thrown around a lot, and I thought you're the guy to ask.
The fiduciary is acting in the client's best interest. And so you have to ask the question, how do you get paid? There are a fair amount of Wall Street people that still get paid on a commission, so depending upon the product that they sell. So certainly annuities, insurance products are all commission-based. Some still do get commissions based on the mutual funds that they sell. Others are charging a fee, a flat fee, maybe a financial planning fee, some charge an asset, percentage of assets. So you have to ask the question of how do you get paid? And what part of the table do you sit on? So if I'm charging you a percentage of asset, I'm sitting on the same side of the table as you because I'd love to see your assets double because so does my income. Conversely, if your assets go in half, so does my income, and my wife doesn't get is not very excited about that because my income goes down.
Yeah. All right, because, I mean, I don't know. I am so trustworthy. I just thought everybody was out for your best interest, but I guess there are some people that perhaps sell you something so they get a commission, like they're pushing their funds. Is that what the opposite of fiduciary is?
Yep. Okay. So you have to ask the question whenever you are meeting with somebody new, how do you get paid? And that's a fair question to ask anybody that's handling your money.
Awesome. Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist for Murphy and Silvest. I think I'm going to start a podcast called Cover Your Assets, and I'll have you on as a guest. Thank you, Paul.
Perfect. Love it.
Have a good one.